Hello, and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have my co-host and friend, Dr. Jed Hartley, son of a prophet and former member of the International House of Prayer. Yeah. Dr. Jed, it's great to have you on and to talk about all things IHOP KC and education and doctorates and, you know, magic doctorates and fictional doctorates and all of these degrees that people give themselves when they don't actually have them.
Well, I think that's an excellent introduction, Dr. Collins. Dr. Collins sounds way more better than Dr. Jed, for sure. I suppose Dr. Hartley would be what I would actually go by, but yeah. When you throw doctor in front of something, I get why people make it up. And I get why people want to put that doctor in front of their name, because it sounds good. Sounds fun.
You know, it's kind of funny. I don't really care, you know, if my name has it, my name doesn't have it. I actually have some titles that I never, ever use. But I went to college to get my Bachelor of Science. So I guess you could say that I'm BS. And that's probably the best thing. Although I got my associates and I never actually finished that because education was discouraged in the Branham cults. I don't know if we've talked about this, but it plays directly into what we're talking about from a historical perspective. So I'll get into that. But assuming that I had continued and got my BS, I'm John Collins and I'm full of BS.
Well, as, BS is also, I also have my degree in BS. So I'm here with you. I don't know if I've said this on here. I went to a master's program, did all my master's coursework, was writing a thesis about basically the philosophy of religion, had like a mental breakdown because this was before everything that had happened at IHOP had kind of come to the surface. And I remember this like 2 years of just trying to write this thesis being like, there's something really wrong. I was talking about like the freedom of beliefs and how in certain communities you don't have that freedom of belief, and talking about that as like a right, like freedom and access to clean water and to food. Like we talk about these as human rights, and I was engaging with that sort of subject, and then it became just like too much and too difficult for me. And so I kind of put it to the side. So I have all of my master's coursework completed, and I still have to defend and finish writing my thesis about it before I can get out of where I'm not just spewing BS and I can put an MA in front of my name. So working on that one.
Awesome. Well, in the Branham cults, the higher education was strongly discouraged. In some cases, even low level, like there were particular sects that the children could not even get an elementary school education because it's of the devil, my brother. And the history behind it, which we'll get into, like I said, is it's a little bit fascinating. But what it becomes for people who were allowed to have it, in the main sect, it was interesting. They strongly taught against it until my grandfather, who was the pastor, until his daughter, which is my aunt, married somebody with a master's degree. And then suddenly everybody can go to college. It's suddenly allowed, right? In that particular church. Now, outside of this, they were kind of frowning upon it. But there's a high level of double standards across the whole movement. But what Chino and I were talking about recently, there's this problem when you're in a cult and you're indoctrinated in a certain worldview, and you're indoctrinated that outside of this worldview is death and destruction and doom and gloom, and you're going to hell. Well, what happens is people kind of bottle up and isolate, and they don't experience things outside of this. So we heard sermon after sermon of you know, it's okay. We understand in today's world, you must go to college. You must get a degree because that's how you and your family survive. But oh, by the way, we see all of these people who go to college and they leave this message, my brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, they start talking like there's these demons that are just influence the whole system.
Yeah.
Which is by design, according to the history that we'll get into. But what happens is it, like for me, I really should have finished. I should have went on through, mm-hmm. and maybe one day I will. But while I was in it just long enough to get my job, and I was indoctrinated to think that's good enough. I don't want to go any further. I don't need it. I have a job.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the way that you are taught and you're situated around education, like that never goes away. You feel a lot of your... It takes a long time to like retrain your brain to think of these institutions. And I fully agree. Maybe it wasn't as like explicit in our community, but there was, I mean, a huge hesitancy towards education in general or particular types of education. And I remember there being a lot of what I now think of as just projection. You know, because what do people say in these sort of insular communities where there are intense sort of religious dogmatic beliefs that you have to adhere to? What do they say about education systems? They say it's, you know, if you go to college, you're going to get brainwashed and it's all, you know, propaganda and it's all this, you know. And it really is a lot of projection of like what we are experiencing in our community. Like I remember going to college and thinking that I was going to have to like defend my beliefs from an onslaught of individuals who disagreed with me and who were going to pick apart my faith. And like throughout all of my undergrad and my master's, there was never one time where I ever had to defend being a Christian. I wasn't always a Christian during that time, you know, like, but like certainly when I was in my undergrad, I would consider myself Christian. And when I was like there was never anybody who was like, oh, I can't believe you believe that. Like I was in Kansas City, like half of the people around me were Christian. Same my master's program. I'm doing a master's in philosophy. And like of my cohort, like three out of the seven of us were like explicitly Christian. And one of them was even a pastor within. And it's just like that. There was this idea that you couldn't hold on to Christian beliefs if you went into academia. But what the reality was, is that you couldn't hold on to cult beliefs as well. Those were the things that were challenged. Those were the questions that were raised that critical thinking in general is going to posit. Because when you have, when you're a part of a community in a system that requires such a specific method of thinking, any other method of thinking, any other sort of external beliefs will be, you know, devastating to the sort of integrity of the system because it all falls apart as soon as you're like, well, does this make sense? Does this make sense? So, yeah, you know, some of those like my views on the end times obviously became much more difficult to hold when I went to secondary education and when I started having to like, you know, we're doing politics and I'm like, you know what, my theory that the world is going to end in 2015 and that, you know, Jesus is going to split the sky and that, you know, the tribulation is going to start, I don't really know how all that fits into contemporary secular you know, politics. And so maybe this doesn't fit well in the conversation that we're having. Like those are the things where you're like, ah, this doesn't work. But like, yeah, it generally was very unoffensive in education. And also like, they have other things to do. And you know, the professors there are going to be like, here's some of the things that we believe there, but they're interested in just completing the class and doing this. Like, it's a job. It's not, they're not there to like mold your mind, where the community that we were both involved in, respectively, were very invested in what we thought, where it was like critical that we believed the same thing that they believed. In secondary education, no one cares. It just doesn't matter. But it took me years to kind of get over that sort of innate prejudice that I had been given towards the education system.
The point we're trying to drive at later in the podcast is all of these false doctorates and all of these degrees that they're giving. But before we get there, we probably should talk through some of the history so people understand what this is and why this is so complex. But there's a problem that exists in the cult world, and that is control. You're taught from the top down that you must be controlling. And so because the cult leader is controlling the parents mm-hmm. then become overpowering and overbearing and over-controlling of their children. And that is by design. Every cult operates like this. So let me give an example. I'm a father. I taught my boys how to throw a baseball, like all good fathers should do, even though I'm not a baseball fan or any, I'm not into sports, I'm more into music. But I taught them, you put your left leg forward, and then when you throw the ball, you step, and you put your right leg next, right? Because they're right-handed, and that works better. And I tell them, when I teach my children something, I teach them why. Here's what you do, here's why you do it, and they learn from it. If I were to take them to, say, join a league, and they have a teacher who's saying, all right, now we're going to show you how to throw a ball. You're going to put your right foot out first and then step with your left, which is awkward. Number one, it's awkward. The kid's going to mm-hmm. experience and then decide for themselves, no, this is ridiculous. This doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Number two, I have trained them. And because I've trained them, they know, well, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, Dad. Mm-hmm. And that's how children work. That's how, as a parent, that's what you do. You teach your kids and they learn from you. And you don't have to fear them going and learning how to throw a baseball incorrectly because you've taught them, right?
Yeah.
But in the cult world, they have taken, they'll do that with baseball, but send them to a church where they're being taught false doctrine. They have this fear that suddenly your kid's mind's going to be hijacked and stolen, and the demons are going to infest them and plague their body with demons, whatever is the weird nonsense. Because it's so flipped upside down, where in the religious world of cults, you must control, otherwise everybody is powerless to the demons. You've built this fear of being captive by demons, held captive, right? So that problem existed for decades. And the history behind it's very complex. I go through it in my latest book, From Christian Identity to the NAR. But multiple streams of white supremacy, religion, evangelicals, fundamentalists, multiple streams came together, united against the education system. The white supremacists wanted to fight the education system because they were, obviously in the 60s, it was the integration of schools of black or white. But before this, long before this, it was to establish a separation, a segregation. So the segregation didn't exist widespread, so we need to step in and fight the school system. You had the fundamentalists who were stepping in because, oh my gosh, they're teaching evolution in school. And even if I teach my kids that evolution is not correct, according to whatever is your religious philosophy, they might accidentally catch the evil spirit of being taught evolution, whatever it is. So you had the fundamentalists who were stepping in for an array of different ideologies that they were fighting against. Then you had Christian Identity, who was at the same time starting to merge with white supremacy and being taught that Catholicism was the number one enemy. And so they were fighting because now you might have Catholics in your school and they might teach Catholic ideas. And so they wanted to set up different school systems. So all of this laid the background for what we're talking about today. What ended up happening is there were many religious leaders that fought education itself. We should homeschool, for example. We should take our kids out. They don't need school at all because the rapture's coming. Doomsday's any day. We don't need it. So they were fighting the school system in a variety of different ways. And some of the figures who were involved with this, like Charles Fuller, who founded Fuller Theological Seminary, from which there were great figures and charismatic and NAR came out of this, he was a public speaker touring with this fundamentalist league that was trying to undermine the school system and promote Christian identity. Now, I'm not saying Fuller Theological Seminary is like that now, but he was one of the key figures, and I have some photographs of him at some of the rallies in Indiana, interestingly enough. So this was a big, big deal. And so they started creating these institutions where they could teach you only what they felt was approved by whatever was the cult, or some of these weren't yet cults, but whatever was the approved doctrines. And they started setting up seminaries, some of which weren't accredited, but you could go get your degree and you could feel comfortable, mainly as a parent, you could feel comfortable that your kid had a piece of paper that said something, whether it was valid or not. And that's really the history behind how all of this got started.
You can see the convergence of multiple streams contributing to this sort of education hesitancy, because it isn't just like obviously it was the communities, the cult communities that both you and I sort of were raised in had this element, but it's kind of an element of just evangelicalism in general right now. I remember the movie God's Not Dead. Have you ever watched that?
I've not seen it, but I know what you're talking about.
I'll just tell you the plot real quick, and it's pretty funny. But the plot of it is basically there's this young man who's going to a public university that is being taught. He's going, I think it's a philosophy class, like an intro to philosophy class. And the teacher there, the professor, played by Kevin Sorbo, is a staunch atheist. And the conflict of the film is that the professor makes everybody in this like intro to philosophy class sign a document saying that God is dead, right? He's like, well, I want to skip this section. If we're talking philosophy, I want to skip the whole like deist section and just get into the good stuff. So he wants everybody to sign this ridiculous, paper that says God is dead, I remember finally studying Nietzsche and reading the whole, where that phrase comes, because it comes from Nietzsche, God is dead and we have killed him. And it's from the parable of the madman, where a madman comes into a market and he's like, screaming about like God is dead. We've killed God. What festivals of atonement now shall we do? And it's actually, now Nietzsche criticizes Christianity a lot, but in that instance, he's actually criticizing like the secular moralists of the day, who are like, we don't need God. We have rationality. We have our own minds, and we have created this world, and God is something of the past. And so now we can create a perfect society together. And Nietzsche is writing this to be like, do you not understand that the whole fabric of society is built around a belief in God? And this madman is like talking about the collapse of society now that we have killed God. So like it isn't even a criticism of Christianity, that particular passage. So that like even the using the God is dead rhetoric is just fundamentally misunderstanding the material. But the premise is just absolutely insane, because never in a million years would that be what happens in a school. You never have to sign a document. Like, that's a totally invented conflict. Like, I went to and studied philosophy. Never did they dismiss like deistic beliefs, because like a lot of the history of philosophy has been intertwined with like the history of religion. Like Plato was religious, Aristotle was religious, Socrates was religious, like all of the Western philosophers were all influenced by Christianity. Only within like the last 100 years do you even have like more secular non-Christian philosophy. And like the entire, you know, Kierkegaard, Camus, all of these existentialists like talk about religion if they are not explicitly advocating for religion. And so this notion that like the higher education is going to stamp out and require you, it's like that, I don't know if you grew up with this, but in the 90s it was a huge thing where it was like, one day you'll be at school and there's going to be a school shooter who says, do you believe in Jesus or do you not? And if you say you believe in Jesus, they're going to shoot you and it'll be great to like die a martyr for Christianity. And it's like, that's just, you're inventing worlds that don't happen. Like that's just not happening in the United States, you know? And this whole like martyrdom complex is just fabrication. It's just fiction. And so anyway, this God is, the plot of God is Not Dead is he does not sign the paper. He makes the protagonist makes a statement of his belief and that he cannot sign the paper, even though his girlfriend is pressuring him to sign the paper and everything. And then they hold a trial where he defends God and the professor accuses God. And it's just, it's so bad. It's so bad. Like it's depressing, both from an artistic perspective and from just like a, you don't, there's plenty of things in the world to be angry and frustrated about. There's plenty of things to work towards of like, there's a lot of discontent and disarray in the world that you can address and be like, we should fix this. So why are we inventing problems? Why are we coming up with issues that just don't exist and making whole fiction narratives to make it seem as if the world that we live in is fundamentally a different world? You know, that there's this weird martyrdom complex in higher education that is, there's a weird martyrdom complex that says that higher education is like coming after a Christian religion. It's just, yeah, it's ridiculous.
You know, it still goes back to what I said earlier. Whenever somebody would go to college, the ministers would say, and we watched Brother so-and-so, he went to college and he left this message, he left a cult. What happens, and it's very ironic because it's to the detriment of these groups. What happens is they create these straw man arguments that don't exist.
Right.
And when somebody goes and they see the straw man argument, first what happens is the indoctrinated fear suddenly hits them and, oh my gosh, I see the straw man. But over time, as they begin to understand what the straw man is and how wrong it is, then they realize that they were lied to in the first place. And
yeah,
that's what really opens the door. And many people do leave the cult whenever this happens. And that problem has existed. Like I mentioned the fundamentalists. So evolution was the big thing. And, you know, the Scopes trial, the monkey trial, all this stuff that was happening.
Right, yeah.
That was just directly mixed into the Christianity of the world.
Yeah.
Before evangelicals became what they are today, they were part of this. That's how it developed. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is, since the theory of evolution was declared, I can't remember what year it was, 1800s, something like that.
Sure.
Since that declaration, we have actually seen animals that have evolved in different ways. You can
totally,
if you want to look at it, you can go, if you don't believe me, you can go to the Google and just type in what animals have evolved since 1850, something like this. The obvious ones are animals or creatures that are living in darker regions, and they're of the nature where they have to be camouflaged to survive. Well, right. Their skin color changes and their tones, everything changes about them. Or what's another good example? Elephants and their tusks. So there are now tuskless elephants, right? We're starting to see these changes, these adaptive changes. And this happens all across wildlife. What's really interesting is you find people who were hardcore against evolution, who actually mentioned that in certain aspects that we were seeing things evolve, which is a total contradiction. And so, to the person who's critically thinking, well, wait a minute, they're saying on the one hand that evolution doesn't exist and we should fight it, and on the other hand, they're saying that they have seen it and they're giving examples of it. Which do we believe? This is a straw man. And the other good one, so the young earth theory. I know that most of our audience is going to condemn me just because I talked about the young earth theory, but if you ever watch Cosmos, the way they explain it, and especially the Neil deGrasse Tyson reboot of Cosmos, there are things about it that are just undeniable in the way that it is presented. And the way that he presents it is, we look out at the stars and we see all the planets, and he gives this like this calendar of when the Earth began, the time in which it would take from the light, which is a constant, to go from the star to us is constant. We know that measurement. The star would have actually burned out by the time it hit our eyes to look at it. And so when you think about all of this being created, you really have to go back to, okay, how did all of this come to be? When God, you know, if you believe Genesis and you believe that that is a literal interpretation, God created all of these things. Well, for the people to have seen them in the early books of Genesis and they saw the stars, those stars would have taken so many years to hit their eyes. So there becomes this conundrum, right? How do you explain the days in Genesis versus how did the light hit them? And I'll go back to my baseball example. If I were teaching my kid the young earth theory in this case, I would say, now, we know that God created everything, and when he created the light, he created the light beams too, and the light beams were just on the cusp of hitting us.
Right.
And then when the kid goes to school, he's not afraid that somebody's going to teach something wrong. But what these guys did in the fundamentalist groups, no, they're going to teach science, and that science is going to contradict our worldview, so therefore they can't go at all. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
Even before the recent sort of like questions of how evolution and like how old the Earth is and stuff, what was the one before that? You know, it was whether or not the Earth revolved around the Sun or the Sun revolved around the Earth, and like you could be, you know, excommunicated for advocating for what, heliocentrism, or you know, the belief that the solar system is the sun is at the center and we're not at the center of it. And I think that there's a spectrum of this, and people are going to be challenged by the thing that I'm saying. Not everybody's going to love what I'm about to say right now, but there is a lot of egoism in especially cult Christianities, right? Because it's, we are a part of the end times church. God has spoken to me. It's very God through me, through my community, through my place in time. And it's very, the history of the universe all coalesces in me as an individual and my church as an individual. Like that is the International House of Prayer narrative. That's the message cult, like the belief that, you know, all of these different Elijahs that came to be in the sort of roots of the Pentecostal church of like, I've read the Bible and I am continuing the spirit of one of the great leaders of the past. Like this is this very like egoistic, you are at the center of the whole narrative of the universe sort of thing. And I've talked about that in the past, but when you get into education, especially science, one of the biggest things that you learn is that you're not that big of a deal. Like you just aren't the center of the universe. There are other cultures. There are other people groups. There are billions of people on this planet. There was a recent study that was even just like, hey, we've probably underestimated how many people are on the planet because we fundamentally underestimated rural populations and that there could be as much as like 10 billion people on the planet instead of just the 8 billion. So the world is like in of itself, much more vast, much more eclectic, much more diverse in its thinking and experiences than we are led to believe. And then the universe is larger. I mean, every millennia, there's a discovery of science that's like, oh my goodness, the universe is so much grander and more expansive than we thought it was. And we are a dot in a speck of a molecule within the vast ocean of the universe. And that is not, I think that that's something that a lot of people really struggle to believe. Like that's just, it doesn't, and I think that that totally and perfectly coalesces with a view of a great God. Like I don't think that those two things have to be opposed, that you can believe in Christianity and believe in God and still understand the vastness of the universe and the relative insignificance of your human life, you know, in a cosmic scale. Like those things don't have to, you know, it's like one of the great paradoxes of religion is like you both are of the utmost importance and you are a drop in the bucket. Like it's, I think that there's something beautiful to that. But in order to push away these uncomfortable notions of insignificance, we have villainized scientific and academic research that just deals with reality, just deals with the fact that we're in a big, vast, open world and universe. And we aren't that, you know, separate in some ways from the other animals that roam this planet, that, you know, we evolution, this idea that we came from monkeys. And it's like, well, which that's not what evolution posits. We didn't evolve from monkeys, but that's a different thing. But, you know, that it's just the uncomfortability. It's only absurd because it makes human beings feel less significant. But that's the only reason that it's absurd. It's just because, you know, we couldn't be the same. And for a long time, people thought it was absurd. You know, races weren't the idea that this race could be just as intelligent as this race was like, you know, there's a lot of racism that like saw different races as fundamentally different and were so aghast by like the differences in to believe that we're just one race among many in the world. And not to compare that to like, you know, evolution or like, I'm just the sort of like dealing with the insignificance that your culture, your community, your people group, your, you know, even human beings in general, Earth in general is not like the only thing that exists in the universe, is just a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow. And I think a lot of these it's a spectrum of it, but a lot of these cult communities that are super egoistic, that really need the narrative of the universe to coalesce in their story, are fundamentally fall apart when you bring in the light of just the reality of other belief systems. And so I get why they're threatened by it. Like, I get why I was taught to go to the IHOP U or to go to the YWAM University or to Bethel. Those were the schools that I should go to instead of going to, you know, a public university, because all of those universities will not threaten this belief. And I say universities very loosely because, you know, they weren't great academic institutions, but all of these churches and church colleges would not threaten this idea that, like, IHOP is the forerunner church that's bringing in, you know, is at the forefront of the end of the known world. Like, that wasn't going to be challenged if I went to YWAM or if I went to Bethel. And so I totally get why they feel threatened by it, but they should be threatened by it because it's a bad belief system. And anytime you get out of the, like, wings of the dogmatic egoism of those communities, you realize how, like, silly they are. And so that's the challenge.
It's funny whenever I listen to you talk, because I also record with Bob Scott. Mm-hmm. Many of the themes that he brings to the show, they cross over with some of the things that you say very frequently. We'll have conversations. He and I just recorded one. When did we record? I guess it was 2 days ago. We recorded talking about how these cults are indoctrinating people to everything is always about me. And yeah, what they're doing is basically they're indoctrinating a narcissistic personality disorder among the people. It's me, give me, that kind of thing. And it's showing its way through society. Everybody's posting these selfies now. And back, you know, 20 years ago, people would laugh at you if you're doing this. Why you? I don't want to see more of you. I want to see the world. I want to see other things. But that's how today's world has become, and it's very weird. But one of the other things that he talked about, you were talking about the race theories, etc. A lot of people don't realize this, but even in mainstream, not religious centered institutions, they were teaching eugenics, which is basically this false notion that you can take races and you can improve the human race by selective breeding and a bunch of nonsense. When you combine that with the white supremacy, with the Christian identity, and all these other things that are flourishing, this was toxic. And yet it was widely believed. And now, obviously, it's not taught in the schools. People realize that, no, this is a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
But that's what was happening in this era. And many of the leaders who were founders of the charismatic movement came out of that type of environment. And it's not really their fault. They were raised in this environment where people truly believe that they should have selective breeding. It's a really weird mess. But what happened was, like I said, the history brought it to the point in which they were so hardcore against the education system, especially in the 60s during civil rights, that they started to try to create ways to circumvent the education system.
Right.
One of the ways they did this was these theological institutions. And it was I don't know if it was a widespread problem, but they were springing up these institutions that were somewhat outside of the U.S. legal system, because there's a separation of church and state. So I can create a religious institution. You can't stop me. I can give them a degree. You can't stop me. But the problem was it was not accredited. So people got a piece of paper and, you know, there's this real gray area back then. Yeah, he's got a degree. Well, does he really? And what's interesting is before that became as widespread as it did, there were significant figures in latter reign that were claiming to be doctor, and they were doctor of nothing. Many of them did not even go to these things to get their fake degree. They were just, they were knowledgeable, and so they got the nickname doctor. And among the movement, the nickname was just as powerful as having the actual piece of paper, because we don't need the paper. The world is ending. We're going to go into the next world. So that's what happened. William Branham's publicist, quote-unquote Dr. Lee Vail, the one who basically all of the literature that we have today, he was a strong proponent in helping organize and create that and swaying the movement in many various ways. He was not a doctor, but his nickname was Dr. Lee Vail. So then William Branham and Gordon Lindsay started holding these seminars where you could go and get trained on quote-unquote deliverance, how to cast out demons and all this stuff. Well, they give you a certificate, and that became as powerful as actually, I would say, argue that among the movement, it probably became more powerful than having an actual doctor's degree, because now you could go to any church in the entire community and I know how to cast out demons. I have this power now because I went to the school. And that developed into this weirdness today where, you know, people are getting these degrees that mean nothing, nothing at all. But within the movement itself, it is powerful.
Yeah. And it is sort of like just a brash, like who's going to put it on their resume and who won't, you know, because it's not everyone has the audacity to do these things. Like not everyone, there's a lot of people who understand this, even within the community, who would be like, I'm not going to be Dr. Hartley if I didn't do my doctorate, you know. But it goes with, I think, a lot of the history of the charismatic and Pentecostal movement, where you have faith healers who are sort of taking the role of doctors and denying. So in the similar sense in which you would have these faith healers who are like, don't go to doctors, like Jacko was one of these, and we spoke about him a couple episodes ago, but he would tell people not to go to doctors, and a lot of these different faith healers would say the same. And they sort of took this medical or pseudo-medical anointing and we're like, come to us and you'll get healed. Don't go to the doctors to get healed. Come to us. And so it's sort of the like co-opting of the medical profession without doing any of the like rigor of the medical profession. And I understand having hesitancy and being like, oh, the medical profession doesn't always get it right. There's, you know, I get being like, well, we're over-prescribing these things. You have to do the work. I don't understand this. Like, why? I grew up in a community that was like, good hard work, don't cut corners, no participation trophies. Like, this was the mentality that I grew up with, and the rhetoric that I was being taught. And like, as a good, you know, Christian, conservative, Midwestern individual, it was like, you got, before you get the reward, you got to put in the work. You can't just have a microwave generation, you know, where you get things instantly. And then on the other end, I realized like, that's just all we were doing with the community. You had people who were practicing medicine or practice, you know, having their own sort of alternative medicine or their healing or something like that. They were preaching without studying the Bible. They were, you know, putting doctors in front of their names without actually going to do the, you know, 4 years of undergrad and then the however long, 7 years in total, 8 years, however long it takes to get your PhD. They just weren't putting in the work. They could have put in the work. Those options were available for them. They could do this, but instead it was just like, because they disregarded and devalued the institutions that weren't directly created within our sphere, they had this notion that you could just create whatever you wanted and you could hand out titles. And again, super egoistic, super narcissistic view of just being like, well, I am smart, so therefore I should be a doctor and I've done the work. Like, I've read all of these different books, so I should be a doctor. And it's just like, No, there's a reason why, like, the label becomes really meaningless and ridiculous. And this was a problem back in the early 1900s where people were practicing medicine and never studying anything. And like there was reasons why there were sort of rules put around these systems. And then you have people now who like, so I'll probably tweet something before this episode comes out. I'll put a good Twitter thread together because I've been wanting to do this for a while. And so I'm going to reference it here. And if people want more specifics, they can go to my Twitter and it will be, I will, have this information. First time I've ever plugged myself. It feels weird. I don't like it. But there's a man named Lance Wallnau. You know, John, do you know who Lance Wallnau is?
I do. I haven't published much about him because I kind of avoid the living whenever I'm publishing about
Yeah,
people. But
I get
Wallnau is
that.
a very, very outspoken supporter of William Branham's ministry. So I do go there sometimes.
Yeah, and he kind of became famous because he had some prophecies about Trump or something, and during the first election, and so he kind of rose to prominence for a while. I don't know how prominent he actually is. It's hard to tell with some of these guys whether or not they matter at all within the community or whether they're just, loud online, but he's certainly loud online. And I was looking up some of his stuff a little while ago, and I noticed on some of his books it was Dr. Lance Wallnau, and I was like, what did he study? And so I went to his Indeed page. And this is why people should look at the Twitter because I'll have it more specifically and detail it. But I followed his Twitter page, or sorry, I went to his LinkedIn page and I like saw the institution that he said that he got his PhD from. And I went to their sort of thing. And it was like they had pictures. I remember going to the website and they had pictures of like this big university campus. And I was like, I've never heard of this university. Come to find out that the pictures of the university campus was like Arizona Theological Institute or something like a totally different institution. And they just like rent out one of the rooms to give their diplomas out. Like that's the so they like have this big picture of the institution, but like they only just like rent once a year a conference room to like give out the diplomas. And I'm sure that the Bible school like just doesn't even know that they're using those pictures. And then and on it I'm reading through and I'm like, okay, well, it seems like it's an accredited thing. It might be a small school. And then I'm looking at the accreditation and I was like, what is this accreditation program? Because like years ago, people started making their own institutions. And then it was like, okay, well, they're not accredited. And so that what they've started to do is make their own accreditation institutions. And so lo and behold, I go to the accreditation institution and I like read about the accreditation. And the one of the founders of the accreditation, institution is Lance Wallnau. So he created the accreditation program that accredited the school that gave him his own doctorate degree. And if you read their sort of like method of doing it is they give like basically honorary doctorate degrees to people who have written books and like then they give out degrees to people who read those books and who minister with them and stuff like that. So it's just like, it's just a circle of people who like all are congratulating each other without any sort of rigor. Like from what it seems like, Lance could have done absolutely zero coursework or any research outside of his own like writing his books to actually get this PhD. And And he's, I mean, even if he did do work for it, you can't be the founder of the accreditation program who accredits the school that then gives you the PhD. Like, that's just, you can't do that. You got to go out elsewhere. You know, like, you can't forge your own degree and put it up on the wall. And, and it's one of those things, because it's like, you know, we deal, obviously, both you and I, John, have like done research. I mean, you far more than me, but we've spoken about people who are doing some pretty horrific things in this world, like the Mike Bickles who are preying on people, or even like my father who's doing like fraud in a way that is very insidious and stuff like that. And I don't really know what to make of the Lance Wallnows, because it's like, should he be in prison for forging his PhD? I don't know. I don't think so. Is it really, really, really ridiculous? Yes, absolutely. And does it like contribute to why, like when the Christian community is like, we are persecuted, no one takes us seriously in academic institutions. And it's like, this is why, you know, like if you're like, oh, I went to this institution and I went to IHOP U and none of my credits transferred over to UMKC when I was doing this, and they don't respect this. And it's like, yeah, people don't respect it because shenanigans like this are going on, and no one's holding them accountable. Like I said earlier, not everyone has the audacity of a Lance Wallnow to just like put doctor in front of their name and to like create this convoluted scheme. It almost would be better if he didn't create the institutions and like this like workaround. Like, it would almost be better if he just was like, I don't respect academic stuff, so I'm just putting doctor there, because it would be like a little bit more transparent. But the whole like dog and pony show of creating this institution, and so it's like, they know they're lying, because if you weren't lying, you wouldn't put the picture of the university that you're not a part of on it. Like, you wouldn't put the if you were just like, oh, we're a humble group of individuals and this is that, you know. I'm pretty sure that this is another level, but like I started getting in the weeds, but like some of the people who are even on the board, I'm not entirely sure if their pictures weren't just AI generated too. That's a different level. I'm not sure. That's me getting my like red thread and pictures and up against the wall. But I mean, regardless, you know, the smoking gun, of course, is just Lance's name being on the very accreditation thing that he's a part of. But it's just, yeah, like I said, it's just very silly, and it undermines the like respect of the community at large, you know, because it's just, what are we doing? We're not trying hard. We're not thinking. We're not engaging in critical thought. We're not attempting to. I mean, you have all of, you know, Western history. You have some of the greatest thinkers of the world were within the Christian community. We're like the greatest artists of the world were, the Renaissance itself was like inspired by Christian and Catholic thought. Like, there doesn't need to be this hyper separation between the rest of the world and us. And the more that we create these insular communities, the more we get these weird, convoluted, messed up doctrines with these, you know, con artists who are leading these just very unchecked and like zero accountability systems and institutions.
I feel like we have come full circle in this podcast, because at the beginning I said that I almost had BS, but if I were to do this, if I were to set up some sort of a fake picture and me be in it,
yeah.
But it raises the question, if I did it and then I said that I had BS, would I actually have BS, or would I have more BS, or would I have less BS? That's mm-hmm. the question. I have no idea how to answer that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there's like, I know that we were both being a little like self-deprecating and making jokes about having, you know, BS degrees, but like, I do think that there is something about being like humble about your education. And like me, so my partner is, works as a professor, at University of Illinois, and like, she's done the work. She has done her post, you know, she got her doctorate, she did her postdoc, and my education compared to her education pales in comparison. And it's good for me to be reminded and humbled all the time of just being like, damn, she's smart. And like, she's had to work for it. And like, if I, you know, I'm proud of the fact that I got, you know, I graduated with honors in my bachelor's degree, and like, I'm frustrated that I haven't finished my master's yet, but I will. And like, and I completed my master's coursework and did great. Like, I'm proud of the education that I've done, but like, I recognize that it is not significant in academic worlds, because there's just, people have to put in a lot of work to separate yourself from the rest of the group. You gotta like really roll up your sleeves, and you gotta get to work, and there's no other way around it. And I really respect the people who have done that, and not all of them. We've all met people who have PhDs through, you know, prestigious universities who you're like, I don't know how they slipped through the cracks. You know, like, it's not, I don't want to like glorify or not pretend like there are still a lot of problems with like academic institutions. Of course there are. But there, something happens when you fail to respect worlds and institutions outside of your community. And it will just set up this sort of dogmatic situation where like, you have to, and your children have to, and their children have to hold this sort of prejudicial view of the rest of the world. Otherwise, the whole power and structure of your community falls apart. And it's very different than the like, I taught my kids how to throw a baseball, and regardless of wherever they go, it's, this works for them. This is the mechanics that work. It's like, you know, you have set them up for failure, and now they don't, you know, it'd be like teaching them how to throw a baseball where you have to do some religious, you know, like the basketball free throws, you know, how they all have their routines and stuff like that. If you, instead of teaching someone how to shoot a basketball, were like, okay, you have to spin the ball three times, do this and stuff like that, you're setting them up for failure, because if they, you know, go to any other world, they're going to be like, you know, shot clock violation. You can't do that every single time. It's just this sort of like creating these sort of dogmatic beliefs and routines and systems that just fundamentally fail in any sort of outside world, and then demonizing the outside world for that, rather than recognizing the insufficiencies of the community that you yourself have created and lived in.
Well, I can tell you didn't get your doctor's degree from one of the accredited NAR institutions, because you spin it seven times, not three times, if you want the actual glory of God to come down on the baseball.
That would make way more sense, of course.
So much more we could say about this, but I think people get the point. This is not right, what is happening. This is a little bit of a mess, and it is still going on. So
one last thought too, of like, we didn't hit on it. We hit on it in previous ones, but like, it also then leads to really sad situations of young adults getting wrapped into these institutions that are created, that are phony institutions that don't give you a whole lot of life experience or knowledge, don't have, you know, they're not useful. The degrees are not useful in any community outside of that community. And so you're then, fallacy of sunk costs. You're now like, well, I can't leave the International House of Prayer because my degree is only valid here. And like, maybe a few other sort of cult-like religious communities. And it's really heartbreaking. I know that a lot of people, myself included, who like, that was the first, you know, I went to YWAM and I did this, like my first foray into the academic world was through these phony sort of religious institutions. And you have to, it sets you behind in your career. If you're wanting to ever branch out of that world, if you want to be anything other than like a missionary or other than a prayer leader at IHOP, you know, it sets you behind. And I'm feeling that. And I know that a lot of other individuals are feeling the cost of that. So as much as like the Lance Wall now thing is silly and ridiculous, and we can kind of just like shrug our shoulders at it and be like, this is dumb, I don't know why he does it, it lends to this sort of more predatory system where young adults think that they are going to institutions that are, if not prestigious, or at least competent, you know, believe that they are giving a proper sort of like investment of their time and money. And of course, it isn't.
Well, now you've talked me into it. Next time we're going to have to go deeper into YWAM.
It's about time. We probably need to address it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's do it. If you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.